Welcome to the Joy of Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Dr. James Taylor. On this podcast, we explore the passion and purpose of leadership. Join us to explore lessons in leadership that demonstrate how you can live in the center of God's will. All right. Hey, listen, it is great to have the founders of H2All. We get to have the big sign out on our field. We appreciate all that you guys have done for sponsorship here. But we're super glad to have Joel Cobb and Nick Cornwell on the show. So, hey, give us kind of the story of how in the world H2All came about. We'd love to hear that.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. It's always great being back. I can say being back at home here at Hebron, having some kids that went here about 10 years ago. So it's always great for the hospitality that when you pull in the parking lot. So thank you guys for that. H2All, wow, how did that thing start? Well, Nick and I actually met on a baseball field back in 2019, okay. Coaching our kids out in Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Okay.
And Nick and I founded a nonprofit called Generation U, and we were both at a stage in our life where we were really focusing on kind of what do we want to be remembered for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've done well in life. We've done certain things and still didn't have that content feeling. And what can we build a life on that's worthy and worthy of, you know, hanging your hat on? And what are your kids going to really talk about, you know, more than just a good career or a lot of money in the bank or
right.
a 529 plan or the paid off house, or
right.
the new RV.
Right.
And so we've been working in the humanitarian space for quite a while in Africa. I've been out there for the past 20 years, all types of different projects from building orphanages to hospitals to self-sustaining communities. And we really landed on water was a true needle mover. And how can you really empower a people group? And so we really put our heads together and continued to focus deep into the water space, specifically in East Africa. And so we launched a nonprofit called Generation U back in 2019. It's alive and well, doing great as we sit here, Dr. Taylor, today, as we speak on this podcast. Right now, we're giving water to over 320,000 people in East Africa, which we are very proud of.
That's right.
But as business guys and entrepreneurs, we would always go to bed at night, man, we can do more. Like, there's more we can do. And how can we do more? And how can we scale something even faster? We've been very successful in business and we could scale businesses, but in the nonprofit world, we knew there was a need. And in East Africa, there is a need of clean water and a lot of hygiene education. But at the same time, there's a need right where we live, both here in Georgia and Colorado, all over North America. And we're thirsty here. It's just a different type of thirst, more of a purpose thirst, a connection thirst. And so we continue to challenge each other. Everyone we would speak to in the nonprofit world was like, man, we want to get involved. How do we help with this? And how can we do it? But for whatever reason, as you know, in the charity world, we kind of ran into what we'd like to say kind of three areas that we started dissecting apart. And people would always say, for example, if we went around and said, hey, who wants to help humanity? Everyone raise their hand. Who knows how? Who trusts it?
Yeah.
And so we kind of started thinking, man, everyone says they want to help. They just don't know how to help. They might not have the means, the money. And if they're not connected to a church or to a leadership group or to a Rotary Club, or they're not running the turkey trot for cancer, that human really doesn't have a mean to almost give back and help. Not that they don't want to. They just don't know how.
Right.
And then third, most importantly, it was a transparency. People wouldn't help because they didn't trust the system. And so we continued to challenge each other and said, man, what could we do to bring to market a simple exchange? And so that's how H2All was formed. And I'll let Nick kind of pick up H2All from where it is now and how we got here.
That same great feeling that we, you know, feel as we give and we live bigger than ourselves. Couldn't we share that with everybody?
Right.
Right. As we think about giving and we think about living a bigger life than ourselves, why wouldn't we share that with the world?
Mm-hmm.
And so H2All, a platform, really is about giving, living a bigger life than just yourself, but it is disguised as a bottle of water.
Right.
Right. That we know everybody buys, everybody drinks water. We all need it. So what better way than to scale something to the masses? so that everyone can benefit, so that everyone can enjoy that life experience and do it without extra money, extra time, something that you do every day. And the synergy between giving water and getting water made a lot of sense, made a lot of sense for us. And so we've launched a bottle of water that really is a platform for doing good and allowing other people to do good. And what we really believe is that, you know, as we think about helping people very far away, if you go to the QT or your local convenience store and you're moved to purchase with purpose, you might just walk out of that convenience store and you might see somebody that's in need and you might actually have bumped the rudder just enough to where you help that person load up their groceries or fix their flat tire. And if you did that every single day and you did that at scale, we might actually improve our own world and our own communities just by doing something so simple as that. Mm. And so we're very honored to be able to share that with this community, obviously a purpose-driven, intentional community. And that's why it speaks so loudly here.
Tell me what are the markets you guys are already in?
Ooh. So here's something for Hebron. Hebron is our kind of the birthplace is what we would probably want to call it, is the first ecosystem to start being formed. Okay. As to say, hey, this is a like-minded, a purpose-driven community that would speak to this and allow us, as you are seeing right here, by allowing us to be on this podcast, to share this story. It really is this is the place. This is where it's starting. But we've had tremendous success right out of the gate, just because we have a point of difference, as what they call in the beverage industry. This isn't about a recyclable bottle, or it's not about a, you know, fancy pH balance that's being sold or promoted. It's 2 parts hydrogen, 1 part oxygen. But it comes with purpose. And so that's a point of difference. It's unique to any beverage, really, or any product that's out there on the market in terms of the true transparency. And so when somebody scans the QR code, and listen up here, this is key. When somebody scans this QR code, it actually takes you to your point of purpose. And so when you scan that QR code, you see exactly where that contribution went. It measures it. It keeps track of your contribution. So at the end of the day, you can look and say, I have done good, and I can measure that, and I know exactly where that went. And so right now, there's a village called Kodima in Uganda, Africa, who's actually receiving the benefit of everybody here at Hebron's contribution. So every time a purchase is made, we contribute a gallon of water, that funds a gallon of water, to a small town or a small village called Kodima in Africa. And anybody who comes in contact with one of these QR codes, you scan that QR code and it'll take you right there. And it'll tell you exactly, speaking to the true transparency and the exchange. You got a bottle of water for the same price you always buy water for, and yet it did something more than quench your thirst. It actually quenched somebody else's.
How long has this been around?
We are in the very infantile stages. Okay. We're working with a local distributor here that we're very proud of. It's got a footprint in both Georgia and our home in Colorado.
Okay.
And so we will be standing up both of those ecosystems sort of simultaneously. And, we'll look to grow that nationally. Obviously, it has legs. We've met with some really, really key distributors and retail spaces that obviously see the difference here. And it creates a hero story within the entire supply chain.
Right.
So the distributor is, you know, responsible for bringing it in and then distributing it into the retail space. The retail space then sells it into the consumer. All along that line, those people are heroes, no matter what role they played. Hebron right now is a hero. Mm-hmm. 1,200 gallons of water have been given to places in need from Hebron right now. So we can celebrate that today.
Right.
Thank you, Hebron. Yeah. That's incredible. And we can measure that. You know exactly. We can tell you exactly where you're at right now. And each individual can also take credit for their contribution by going in and scanning that QR code.
Yeah, I love the idea. And I think the mechanism that you guys have, adding the tech piece to it, and also just that piece of philanthropy, giving is actually kind of like a learned skill, right? When you kind of get the idea, you develop the heart posture of giving, it becomes easier to do so the second time or the 200th time, right?
That's right.
So right now, like right now, these are not, it's not available in grocery stores, but very soon, kind of the intention is this will be available in grocery stores and convenience stores and everything through the Georgia area and Colorado first, and then hopefully nationally.
That's correct. And also you can buy it online. We are shipping in this area right now, direct to consumer. So you can go on our website, you can buy it. It actually becomes very, very convenient, right? Instead of going and buying cases of water every week, we can simply deliver cases of water, same price, no extra cost, free shipping. So, you know, you're paying $2 a bottle, you're going to get it for $2 a bottle. It'll land at your door, and you don't have to go shopping for it. So added value.
Awesome. I love that. Yeah. So take me to the mission. Like how do you, you guys said you've already been in that space in Africa for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Kind of tell me how that was developed. How did that even get created? How do you pick the villages? Is it a partnership with a ministry? Are you doing this on your own? What does that look like?
Yeah, we with our extensive network on the ground, and you know what we've been able to do, Dr. Taylor, is we've truly done this in reverse. A lot of companies will start out and say, "Hey, man, we're also going to do good," but they're having to figure out what the do good part is, or they're having to sub that out and donate it to another charity. And for us, we were able to do the charity part first and truly understand that piece and that line of sight of that work, is we truly know the water crisis from that expert level. As we've been on the ground, we've dug many water projects, we've eliminated typhoid in certain areas. And so to be able to do that part first has been the key success, because as you know, we could wire $1 million over to a far place land, and for that work to get done, there has to be a lot of network on the ground. And our network on the ground, they identify those villages throughout the partnerships that we have with local government, local communities, local district leaders, and we identify from who doesn't have a water source. How far is the cleanest water source? What's the state of the village from a disease standpoint? And, you know, we all like to think at first on a flying high at 30,000 feet, man, these people are thirsty. They don't have water. They have water. It's just the disease that's carried within the water. Are the lineages of, for example, I've got a 17-year-old son. And to this yesterday morning, I had to tell him to brush his teeth. Still have to tell him to brush his teeth. And so as an orphan out there, if you're 6 years old and you have no parents, who's telling you to wash your hands? And so as we identify and some of these communities come online to say, okay, here's these targeted areas that need, let's measure and figure out the data of the community. How sick is this village? And so we go in there with an extensive survey and with our team on the ground, and we survey the entire village before water's brought. And so we can understand kind of the sickness. We survey once the water is brought to the community, along with our hygiene education and curriculum, so that we can identify, and we'll take the community, we'll actually bring microscopes out into the bush of East Africa. Granted, these people have never seen a microscope, and we'll identify what we know as a germ. And so we'll educate that on a germ. At the same time, we'll educate the pathway. You know, I like to always read the book of Proverbs, and, you know, what's a wise man and a fool man, and what's the difference between the wise man and the fool man? Well, the fool, he had the knowledge, he just didn't apply it. The wise man, he had the knowledge and he applied it. Well, what about the person that didn't have the knowledge? You know, they're not a fool yet until they understand the information. And so we go in and deliver this information and deliver this knowledge to truly empower them in such a way. And so without that network on the ground, with boots on the ground and them identifying the specific villages to go to, we couldn't make it happen. Right now we have 100 villages identified waiting on water projects. Okay.
And are you shared, like in that identification process, is that already your organization, or is that something? It is. So you guys started that.
Yep.
And yet this company is really new.
Yes.
So let's kind of chat a little bit about what life looked like prior to H2All. That you guys were already boots on the ground. You were already doing philanthropic work there. This idea came up afterwards as kind of, I guess, a philanthropic stream of income to be able to help in this mission space. Were you guys already in water? Were you already, like, which I know the answer to that is no, but kind of walk us through what, you know, walk me through and tell me what did life look like prior to this kind of one-off conversation on a baseball field that takes place in Colorado, and then God takes you in a very, very different journey. What does it look like before that?
You want me to go?
Yeah.
I was born and raised down in Vail, Colorado. Very lucky. My family moved me and my brothers out to California, started my life out there. Life was good. Life was wonderful, actually. But I always came back to Colorado to go skiing and hunting and fishing and living that kind of a lifestyle. And yet met my wife, who was born and raised in Hollywood.
Okay.
Chasing some cowboy out in a pickup truck to the mountains of Colorado was just a hard sell. So it took me a while. And in 2019, we finally moved, made our way back out to Colorado into the Steamboat Springs area. I chose that area specifically. It's Ski Town, USA. There's hunting around there. There's great fishing in the Yampa River. And it made the most sense for me and my family at the time. And at that exact same time I did that, I was launching a new company. Could not have been worse timing from a father and a man of the house. Was I launched a company back in California that was right in its infantile stages, much like where we are right now. And it was a facial recognition payment platform. Mm. And we were in very early stages of investment, development. We were, you know, literally walking around with a MVP product, you know, that was, which is kind of fun because it's really like a, I still have versions of 1.0 of facial recognition, you know, hardware and software that looks totally antiquated and even built on wooden stands. And so I was out doing that and I was still chasing, you know, career, money, life that meant that I could go live in Steamboat Springs and ski all the time and living that kind of a lifestyle. And it was really thinking that way. So I found myself living in California, visiting Colorado. And it was during that time that I met Joel, and we were both, he moved there the exact same time as I did. And I'll let him tell that story. But we met coaching baseball on a baseball field right at the base of the ski mountain with sons that are similar ages. And we immediately hit it off as to, we were looking for things that were bigger and better than, you know, really where our hearts and minds were at the time. And so we had an alignment in that way. I kept, you know, going back to California, launching this company, and I got it finally to the point where I could get an arm's distance away and I could spend time back in Colorado and working with Joel and the baseball team and things of that nature, which was really great. But it was during our kind of our communications and our time coaching was really thinking about how can you really lead? How can you really kind of lead a life and be the example? And you got these young men who are in front of you and you're thinking, you know, this is going to apply to you at some point during your life, you know, and you got to be accountable and you got to be a leader and you got to, through the lens of sports, became this conversation that we had. And it was through that kind of those conversations that came to, well, we could really do something big and we can involve these young men and women in our community in the form of sports being the medium. And so we launched a baseball camp. Funded some money. We actually had the boys that were on the baseball program start grading and maintaining the field. And so we would, you know, contribute to them and they would contribute back. And that would actually is what funded our very first well. And it was during that time, Joel and I, it was a good kind of a buddy, you know, challenging kind of environment that we had with one another. And I said, hey, I've wanted to run an ultra marathon that's actually here in Steamboat Springs. It's 100 miles, 26,000 feet of elevation gain through the mountains of the Rockies right here. Do you want to run it with me? And he said, yeah, I'll run it with you. You want to go to Africa? Well, I can't say no now. I can't say no now. So yeah, let's do Africa. And so it was kind of at that point that I knew I needed to make some changes in terms of my allocation of time, resources, and energy. And it was at that point that I finally got an arm's distance away from the, you know, startup that I had. It was a child that now could stand and walk on its own a little bit, mm-hmm. right? And so it gave me the ability to step away from that. And then, you know, obviously going to Africa and being a part of that and then really kind of really getting honed in on what is the real need here? What is the real need? Why do we have orphans? Why are we building orphanages? Why are we funding, you know, these medications and treatments? Why can't we just prevent those from happening? Why are we so stuck in the cure mm-hmm. or the post problem? Right. Why can't we
reactive
swim
rather
up?
Than proactive.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it was with a, you know, keen eye to that to say, wait a second, always asking why, and is there something more that we should be doing? And that's what led us to, okay, no more, you know, medicine, no more orphanages, if we can actually keep people healthy, have lineage so that parents are teaching children and raising children and get and empowering these folks to be able to do their own thing. And there you've never met a more right or a more appropriate population of people that you should be 100% invested in. And so that was really powerful. And so it was at that point I said, you know, I'm going to start applying and we're going to work together. And we launched what we called the 10-10 project. And it was, let's do 10 well projects in 10 months. And we came back from that trip, spoke at our local church, and it was maybe 10 weeks later that we had 10 projects funded and off the ground and running. Wow. And that was our learning curve, and that was our opportunity to really at scale understand what was the opportunity here, what were some of the pitfalls, what were some of the positives, did we really understand this? And then that's what led us into really honing in and being specific on water and then the hygiene and education component of that. And so from there it really became a labor of love. I'm still connected in other parts of my world that help fund my own living and my own lifestyle. But at this point right now, it's a completely 100% philanthropic adventure and an opportunity for me and my family. And then sharing that with our own community and sharing that within other communities has become an ultimate focus. And that's really what ultimately led from a charity to now, why wouldn't we share this with the rest of the world?
I need to pause and say, please, and ask the question, like, did you finish the ultra marathon?
So I, ultra running changed me, and I'll share that, how that kind of associates. I got into running. I was really looking for something that would sharpen me a little bit more. I was a gym rat. I was squatting six and some change. And I was thinking to myself, this isn't really that challenging anymore. It wasn't challenging my mind. So I started running and I actually Googled up what's the hardest run race to do. And I landed me at this race in Squaw Valley where you ran up and down the ski mountain. I had never even heard of, that kind of running up and down this thing. And it was incredible. Well, I did that and I qualified later on, unbeknownst to me, to run this race in Iceland. It was a 24-hour race in the winter, in the dark, with a headlamp. Whoever runs the farthest in 24 hours wins. I thought, this is crazy, but I'm doing it. And you started running. And this is where you really start to learn what is the human really capable of and what is humanity really capable of. And I'll tie that into Africa here shortly. But as you start running and you can't see how far you're running, well, you just have no other choice but to keep running. One foot in front of the other. You don't know if it's a hill. You don't know how long the hill is. You don't know where the bend is. There is no time that matters. You don't. If you run faster, it doesn't change anything. You're still running, right? And so it really all of a sudden became very inspiring to me. And so running became something that I felt was very, very critical for growth, for us learning about how capable we really are as humans, as men. And so I wanted to share that, just like sharing this with other people, because I thought there was such a value and a benefit to that. And so, Joel being my friend, us challenging one another, I thought, what better place than to go sharpen the iron against one another and go, okay, let's see where we can go with this. And so inviting him to be a part of that was critical.
For a guy that's never ran before.
Oh, yeah. Which we were joking around. There's a 5K that's running right here in the Boo.
Yeah, we were in Flowery Branch. Yeah.
Boo
Halloween 5K. Boo Run or
and
something.
He says, man, it was years ago. I would have thought that was even crazy. And now I think that's nothing. I would do that, on a whim. So we have run that ultra marathon now a couple of times.
Cool.
We sponsored that race this last year. And such an inspiring opportunity to see what humans are really capable of. Running 26,000 feet of elevation through the Rockies, through the snow, through the night. You run, it took me last time I ran it took me 28 hours.
Wow.
You run for 28 hours. You don't sleep, you're not resting, you're running and you're going. And so what better way to invite my friend to enjoy the journey with me and to be a part of that. But that parlays into just how capable we are as humans. And as we start to learn a little bit about that, just experiencing it ourselves, you go to some of these third world places and you find somebody who's drinking, water that's out of a mud hole, or living in a mud hut, sleeping on a dirt floor and under a thatch roof, gets up with a smile on their face, gets up and is driven, gets up and speaks and reads seven languages, which for my kid, Spanish too was a major problem, right? And they are so invested into that. And you think, So that's what it looks like. Is that faith? Is that what am I looking at right now? Because how do you get up in the end of the, you know, at the end of every single, you know, evening and truly have a smile?
Yeah.
And what that was it was the strength of humanity, the strength of connection. You got up and you were living for, and you were aspiring, and you were driven by the connection that you had to your community. You had to your, you know, your surroundings. And so that was an incredible kind of moment where I thought, oh yeah, toughest guy around. I run 100 miles. Shoot, that's it. And then you look at somebody who's living in that world, and that's, you think, right, to yourself, you got to be kidding me. I'm the weakest human, yeah, on earth. I'm the weakest. I've flown home for 40 hours thinking to myself, I am absolutely weak. I have absolutely, you know, I can't even scratch the surface of what this strength looks like.
Yeah.
And what is that? Where does that come from? Yeah. Start questioning things real quick.
There's that American sentiment that true happiness comes from the next shiny bauble.
That's exactly right.
You know, and the old shiny bauble is in a storage unit we're paying $3.99 a month for.
That's right.
But we think it's the pursuit of that next, yep, shiny thing. And I've got a good friend who always says, happiness and contentment is an inside job.
That's right.
That you have to already understand your purpose. Obviously, we're all faith-based, understanding who we are in Christ. How does that relationship then apply to what we're actually doing in the real world? Not, yep, the fake world, yep, but the real world. And that's the challenge. And what always amazes me every time I'm in a country, a third world country particularly, that the level of joy, the level of contentment is so vastly different. Yep. Every time I'm bringing students into those spaces, I kind of wait for it, to wait and see, to see they're, in their mind's eye, they're thinking, this looks like a scenario of poverty to me.
That's right.
And therefore, there's going to be sadness and, yeah, discontentment and frustration and hostility. And then they walk in and they cannot believe that these families are happier than these kids, yep, who have every shiny bauble, right, they need. And that's where it really comes down to, like, what is purpose? That's, you know, right, what is the purpose?
Yeah, and you nailed it right on the head, Dr. Taylor. And many times we go over there, you bring people over there, and you're like, man, these guys have nothing, but yet they're way happier than us. And, you know, we've really honed in on that to really, we're kind of shallow thinking because we focus on them having nothing from a materialism, sure, standpoint,
that's right?
The right, from the trinkets.
And they know nothing different.
That's, and they, right, know nothing different. Right. But the thing is you come back and you're, you know, let's hold on. They truly have everything.
That's right.
They have connection on a whole different level than I have connection sometimes with even my own family of my wife and kids, because we wake up and we all go over here to our separate ways, and then we show back up at 6, 7 p.m. at dinner table. And a lot of times it can just be, I mean, just a clash and you're coming, mm-hmm, back together, as to, sure, where they're pulling on the same rope all day long, all month long,
right,
and they're kind of together. And so you miss that connection, and that's what we're very encouraged about the platform, because we feel like that is a connection,
that's
piece, right, that we, mm-hmm, can connect people here.
Right.
You know, as people are thirsty over there, we can truly connect them here. And when you go back to the faith part, you know, I always go back to Nehemiah. I believe we're a body, and as a body of Christ, right, we all have different, not roles, but different job descriptions, so to speak, because if we were all a hand, it'd be a disformed body. And for me and for us, it was really the story of Nehemiah. As I go back to my kids that went here, right? And as a dad, and you're growing up with those values, and you're pointing them to the life, the truth, the way. How does a fifth grader really go share salvation? How does an eighth grader really do it without being cuckoo? It's hard in today's world, right? Right? How did Nehemiah do? He just built a project. He just went back and built a project. One of the smartest mans. He was a king's right-hand man, so you know he's very, very smart. But he went and got authority to go back and rebuild the walls. And what did he use to rebuild the walls? Was it only church people? No. It was anyone that would come up and use their two hands, mm-hmm, and focus on a project and then let God continue, mm-hmm, to work. And then as that project was done, Nehemiah, we know, could talk. He dealt with the king. He didn't lead the people to the Lord. He led them down to the water gate and let Ezra do the job. And just really connecting. And so we see our job as, you know, one of the things is how you can carry out your faith and go build a project. And for me, when I study, you know, the disciples, and for me, when I, you know, drop the nets, what does that really mean? You know, and as I would sit in church on Sundays, but then show up to work on Monday, it wasn't aligning. And that was just, mm-hmm, for me personally. And so that's when we, hey, let's just go build projects.
Yeah.
And let's connect people to a much bigger purpose. And all our job is to plant a seed, mm-hmm, and then let God water that seed and connect them through that platform to something much bigger, to that same feeling we all have, like, holy cow, I am weak. They've got it. There's something they have that I don't have. Mm. And why not share that, like Nick said, to the masses?
You know, the imagery of the wall with Nehemiah. I'm always taken in Nehemiah chapter 1, the picture that we don't necessarily see in the chapter. You got to read between the lines. But for two and a half generations, this wall's been torn down. So you figure, like for almost 100 years, people have been walking in between fallen stones, so much so there's probably paths, you know, worn in the way. And there's been lots of great leaders. The same guys who are listed in Nehemiah chapter 3 who are rebuilding portions of the wall were walking around fallen stones. Yep. Nehemiah walks in, and he sees the problem, and he weeps. It becomes personal to him. And he says, man, we're going to fix this wall. We're going to repair this wall. There have been generations of other leaders doing things, doing important things, who've been walking and carving paths around fallen walls. And he walks in and says, we're going to build this wall.
That's right.
You know, and that's the point. Like, that's where I see, like, with you guys with H2All, and frankly, with anyone who's saying, I'm going to move past myself. I'm going to see a problem. And rather than say, you know, someone should take care of that. Mm-hmm. We say around here, we always say we are the they. When people say, oh man, they should do that, or they should do this, we say, we are the they.
That's
like,
right.
We are the they, so cut it out. Like, we're the ones who are going to get it done.
Yeah.
And that's such a challenge. And I love that you guys have jumped into that space. Joel, I want to come back and hear your story as well. Pre-H2All water. Walk me through what that looks like.
Yeah, so it really goes back to Generation U. I was, you know, build the nonprofit Generation U. And prior to that, we lived here in Georgia, born and raised in Buford, Georgia, married to my high school sweetheart. And I like to say I was Buford before Buford was cool. I graduated in 1998. We were single A. We weren't winning any football champions. And so my wife graduated in 2000. I went to Georgia Southern for about 6 months and realized, man, I'm in student debt down here partying. This is not where I need to be. I just need to go up and started working. So started working and started applying myself at a young, young age. I've always been an entrepreneurial, never really had someone sign my paycheck since I've been 15 years old. And so got into the home service companies where we did HVAC and electrical and had some really good, good runs. And then also had some trials. And I always like to say James 1:4, count your trials as blessings. Mm-hmm. And so kind of got a state in my life where, you know, I begin to really question a lot of things. April 13th, 2008, God radically changed my life. That's when I came to know Christ. Before then I was lost as last year's Easter egg, as I like to say, didn't even know the meaning of Christmas. But God started radically changing me, and I'm the type that I'm a type A personality, and it's either all or nothing. And so for me, as I started reading the Gospels and consuming myself with God's word, it really challenged me. I was like, man, you've got one life to live here, and what are you doing? And, you know, if you want to be fisher or men, drop the nets, and what does that really, really look like? And so I got on a spiritual journey, and we were members up at Christ Place up in Flowery Branch, deacons, and went on my first mission trip in 2009. I just said yes, and that's when really things started to happen. Mm-hmm. And served on an organization where we were building orphanages and self-sustaining communities, but still God was challenging me.
In Africa. All right. Yeah.
Even within the own church and even my own, my spiritual growth, I love how you say we are, you know, they are we. Mm-hmm. And so God would just continue to challenge me, man. And I would almost feel like I was playing games at the foot of the cross sometimes of, you know, go to church Sunday but live my life or live a life of self-contentment Monday through Friday and focus on the bank account and focus on other things. And so that was the journey that God really started with me of, you know, how can I continue to share the gospel with people who don't know the gospel? And how do I come in a way where, you know, you're not necessarily the church crowd, right? And Jesus hung around with sinners, not only to love them, but to share truth. You know, and so that's where we got into Generation U. Generation U was a nonprofit, and we believed as Generation U, it didn't matter what color you are, what race, what religion you are, what you believe at this point right now. We believe that you are the generation that can make a change. I believe that if you're alive and breathing, even the atheist right now, God has a plan for you because you're alive and breathing. You woke up and there was breath, you know, given to you, and it comes back to the wise man and the fool. Mm-hmm. And at that stage in life, I felt like I had wisdom, and I would go to bed every night, man, I could do more. I mean, if I study Peter and James and Paul, and you know, it's just phenomenal. And so that's where my life and my wife, thank God, my wife is a strong believer, and continued that relationship. And we just really wanted to go and build the second half of our life really on firm foundation and not sand. Mm-hmm. And so we stayed true to building and forming that nonprofit. And really our intent was, how do we connect everyone to the gospel? How do we connect everyone to a project and not being cuckoo about it, and mm-hmm. just really showing love and showing truth?
Sure. Are you guys still going back and forth to Africa?
We just got back September 8th. We actually took our marketing agency out there, okay. which has been a neat experience. As we've got a pretty high-powered marketing agency that's done major brands all over North America, and they saw what we had and immediately, hey, guys, we want to be a part. Not only do we want to be a part, we want to invest in you guys, and we did likewise. Hey, we want you guys. This is more than a bottle of water. Mm-hmm. This is more than another beverage company. This is something much bigger than all of us. And we want to take you guys and get you immersed in the project out there so you guys can truly see it. So we just got back September 8th with about 14 people out there.
That's great. Tell me the nuts and bolts of what it looks like. First of all, what countries are you involved in Africa? And what are the nuts and bolts? Like, do you own a well company there? Are you subcontract? Like, what are the actual nuts and bolts? How do you make it happen?
Yeah, so we work in East Africa, primarily Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, a little bit of South Sudan, and the Congo. Specifically, we stay specific, kind of like a hub and spoke with all of our projects right now, just mm-hmm. so we can maneuver work in those areas.
And okay. that hub is right on the border of Uganda and Kenya right now.
Okay.
And so we work out from that, which is an incredible experience. And so utilizing that, we also now have, basically we have a contractor out there who does all of the drilling,
okay.
which is important for us just because we're employing folks out
right,
there.
Right, you're using locals.
We're yeah. using locals. It is their truck, which was good for us because we don't know how to, you know, we have no idea about the labor laws and some sure. of that type of stuff. And so we simply partnered with them, and it's been a great relationship because it also allows us to stay connected to each project.
Okay.
Things break. Things fall apart. Things, you know, don't work. And when you have somebody like that who has that connection to it, to that project, it's very easy for us to sit here today and be blessed with, you know, where we're at right here, mm-hmm. while at the same time there's water flowing and there's people that are being helped, and those pumps and things like that are being mm-hmm. maintained.
How many well projects do you guys have going on right now? And any idea of how many you've completed?
40.
Okay, very cool. Yeah. Okay. Yep. So you've completed 40, you've got 40 going on right now.
We've completed 40 now. We've got a list of 100 villages that okay. are ready to go. We're working in about a total of 80 different villages. We've got out ahead of some of the villages with hygiene education and yeah. curriculum because they see the importance and they're like, man, we need this information now. Even if we can't get a water project funded, we need this information now because breaking the pathways saves lives.
Right.
Right. right. It saves exactly. lives.
And what does it cost to build a well? What does it cost to dig a well?
Yeah.
We call it it's really a project yep. and it's big. Survey. Each place you've got to find where the water is. You've got to do all of that stuff. Then you've got to come out with the drill rig. At that same exact time, we are surveying the people. We have a nurse and a full-time staff out there. So we have two people that manage that health side of things. So they come out and survey, then they educate. We drill the well. The well report or water survey comes back out. We give that to the government. The government then stamps that with approval and says this water is safe for consumption, gives us an entire report on you know, the water aspects, so hardness, minerals, pH, things like that. And then from there, we pop the well, unlock it, let it go. We then educate at that point. And so that same staff will come back, educate those folks as to, now that you have clean water, you probably should wash your jerry can before right. you put clean water in it, wash your hands, manage that kind of stuff. And then we actually then turn it over to one of our internal guys as a PM project. So he goes it's quarterly right now, every quarter to each one of these places, preventative maintenance.
And your project manager is there. They're based in Africa.
He lives there. Great. And so he manages that. And then every 3 months from there, we come back. We then teach a soap making class that goes along with wash your hands. And then we teach them how to make soap and we supply the materials for them to do that. And then what they also actually teaches is number one, their soap. Number two, there's a business idea for you. Mm. So it's very common that they leave one of those classes that has now taught them how to make soap and they'll sell. They bring two bottles to each class and one you keep, one you sell.
Right.
And then you've got a business kind of going from there. And then we maintain that relationship one more time through the 6 month. And then we will return back as surveying just to understand what can we learn from you, the hygiene teachings, and what can we learn from your behaviors? Are you actually applying these things? And then how can that transfer to other villages and other people? And how does that information travel? Because we can't solve a lot of these problems, right, but we can learn from them, right? And then those folks can help solve other problems that other villages or folks are running into. So at the end of all of that, we have a one-year celebration. You know, water is life celebration, where you're feeding people, you're bringing everybody out there. You also present back the information and the data back to those folks as to say, headaches have gone down.
Sure.
School hours have improved. Days of work being, you know, missed, all have been impacted. And we return that back to say, you know, here's a progress report. Here's your report card and do with it what you will. But it's a sense of empowerment. It's to say information, you do with it what you want. We're not here to tell you how to live, but we're here to report back what you've given to us. And at the end of all of that, it's around $20,000 or so that funds that entire piece. And then we earmark some funds for that preventative maintenance piece, right, that you know there's a bolt that's going to break and there's going to be a part of the chain that's going to go bad. But one really key piece to this was kind of the aha moment. We installed these sensors on every well out there, and at that moment it was like bing, we could measure exactly how much water was coming out of the ground. And so we went back out and we installed these sensors on all of our wells, and we could see directly in real time the amount of water remotely. That's right. So once we did this, we now had line of sight to exactly how much water was coming out of the ground, how many people were being benefited, how many hours a day was that pump running. And all of a sudden, it was like we could measure data, and it was a oh my goodness moment, because you think they would say, oh man, this well, they pump it all day. Well, what is all day? 21 hours.
Yep. No kidding.
You got to be. Yes. What? Okay. 21 hours. Oh, how much water's coming out of the ground? 4,000 liters. 4,000 liters in one area? Yeah, in one area. One day? Yeah. And we could measure that. And so that was really kind of the data along with the impact of the health and hygiene. Mm. You compare those two. And ultimately, the algorithm goes like this. How much money does it cost to produce how much water? And how much water plus education can impact these health statistics or illness? And what does that illness or improvement or health improvement do for your quality of life, being going to school, education, work, things like that? And then ultimately, quality of life improves GDP. You're going to school, you're being educated, you're at work, you're being able to fund and be, grow the GDP. All of a sudden that became really the measurement of which we had a true line of sight to us. How much money does it cost to produce this GDP output? Why is somebody in a third world? It's a GDP measurement, right? They just can't get out of that space. And
of the 40 projects you guys finished, when did you finish your first one?
So that was interesting. We did a baseball camp in September, or end of August 2020.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was right in the midst of COVID.
Yeah.
And so we were able to, as a little community in Steamboat Springs, the population is only about 14,000 people. And so we were able to use that baseball camp and fund our first well. We drilled it September of 2020. COVID restrictions put some restrictions for us traveling out there. Mm-hmm, yeah. And so we weren't able to get out there until July of 2022. And so we got out there July of 2022 to go see that first well in a village called Magali. Mm-hmm. It's still going alive and well right now.
That was my next question. Yep. Are you tracking all 40?
We tracked
all. I know you've got the system on each well.
Yes.
You're still tracking the community to the impact?
We track all the impact. Awesome. And you know, that's the biggest difference. And you go back to the Nehemiah thing. Like you said, there's people that walked around the rubble for a while and they just didn't even know, but they still walked around it. And so you kind of, you know, when you have these aha moments, we can do things different. Mm-hmm. And when you go out and you start studying some of these other organizations, every country in the world has been out to these places to do certain things, whether it's to bring them food, to bring water. But what's happened? Why is it not fixed? Here we are. We're talking about colonizing Mars, but we got 771 million people. So it just didn't make sense to us. And just like the Nehemiah vision, we wanted to think outside the box and think different. And so we did know from a business background, really PMs, preventive maintenance, these things are going to break. Because what we have realized too, going back to playing games at the foot of the cross, is that not in vain at the time, I always say the deceived doesn't know they're deceived, right? Or they wouldn't be deceived. But so many times people and organizations are going out and it's all about them, right? That's it's going out and it's to fill them up, right? And to maybe answer a calling but at the end of the day, it's almost done shallow, selfish motives. If you really start to dissect it, and let's go out here and pop a well or feed a village and get a picture and smile, and then we're going to come back to Decula and whatever. But hey, look what I did 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, and so we've heard the horror stories. For someone that's been working out there for 20 years, I've been a part of every orphanage, self-sustaining community project, that type of business mindset that is going on out there. And there's in many places where helping can hurt. And so when we truly really empower these people, employ these people, put SOPs in place to make sure, hey, we know this well is going to break, but we're going to service it every 3 months to prevent it breaking.
And so all 40 of the wells, they're still up and
running. They're up and running.
That's part of your goal, part of your mission is the ongoing maintenance.
To solve this problem.
Not
just to go there and walk through the rubble or pick up a couple of pieces.
I love
that. It is really an attempt to solve it. And that is exactly why scale really matters.
That's right.
You've really got to take it to a level that no one else has obviously taken it to. And so that's the whole idea of why H2All exists, is you can't go out there and ask why and then come back and go, oh, that's for they.
Right. Right. And right now you guys have more opportunities for mission than frankly you even have availability to serve at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Are you jumping in? Like, you're jumping in to some areas of the world that are not filled with peace.
Yeah.
And so have you guys dealt with some political challenges to this? Are you dealing with different factions that are, because I would imagine that well is also power for whoever's controlling the well. Is that a challenge there as well?
Let me use Uganda as an example. This is powerful, right? And we all know that from government, the church, the community, we like to look at it as it's kind of a three-headed thing that you've really got to be able to navigate. And getting in front of it is one of the most important keys to that. And nurturing that relationship. That relationship that we have with Magali and the village out there of 8,000 people, we still are there. We are still a presence in that space. Well, at the same time, so you've got that community support behind you. Well, at the same time, partnering with the government and saying, hey, listen, we're not here to take, we're here to give. This is a neutral offering. We're not charging for any of this. And so in that neutral offering, it really sort of starts to, it kind of neutralizes everything, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It neutralizes the conversation. And then what you end up really being is a resource. And so this is interesting, in Uganda, we have folks from the government have reached back out to us to say, there have been water projects done here, completed, and they're broken. They maybe have fallen into the wrong hand, or mm-hmm. they are no longer being serviced. And they've reached out to us to say, you have set an example in a bar. We would like to partner with you. Would you please mind going to those projects and bringing those back to life? And can you, because they were meant with good intention.
Sure.
They were placed in a really probably great spot. What failed was the long-term vision of actually really trying to solve a water crisis versus I came out here to serve for a minute and then I left. And so that's been an incredible example of really partnering with the people, the community, and the church to say, hey, we're working together all And if you're not servicing one, it's working against you, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't include the government in your conversation, just if you were to do here, right? And you just started drilling water projects around, you know, this community, you'd have the government knocking on your door right away, mm-hmm. in whatever form that looked like, and in any form of that. And so we've made it a very intentional part of our program as to be out in front and to partner with these folks, not to come and say how to live your life or you have to check a box or any of that nature, and which now has opened up to plethora of opportunities that, you know, quite frankly, to your point, we can't even keep up with yet, and we're looking to do that.
What does staffing look like for you guys? Is it hard? I mean, I can't imagine there's a whole bunch of guys driving around with trucks that dig wells. I mean, is it a challenge? Because you're digging the projects, but then you're also maintaining the projects, yeah. which the maintenance is truthfully probably where the magic really mm-hmm. is, because a broken well was just a temporary sustenance, right? So is that a hard part of working in that zone?
No.
It's not?
No, it's incredible.
Not with the network.
I mean, the network, we couldn't do this without this network, right?
Right.
And this is a group of people that we've known for the extent of this project and beyond. These are folks that are looking for work. They're looking for ways to contribute back to their own community mm-hmm. and be a part of that. And so when you look out there and you say, we need a nurse, there are educated nurses mm-hmm. right there that need an opportunity, and you can put that person in a place and to be able to provide that to them.
And what's been really cool, Dr. Taylor, is that the history that we've had working in Africa for 20 years, five of the people that are working for us up right now, they were street children that I specifically went and rescued out of the dumps that were huffing kerosene from pimps, and they were 4 and 6 years old. Well, now that kid's 24, 26. Right. He's been through university. The lineage of network that we have is almost something that I don't want to say is irreplaceable, but that's a hard thing, and there's not a lot of organizations that have that true line of sight and that rich history. And so without those people, we couldn't do it. But it's the connection, and we haven't known these guys since last year or two years ago. The kid was four.
It's
he
been
was
a
six.
Two-decade
right. He was a Muslim and then became converted. And I mean, just these relationships that have been really gifted to us. And that was what, you know, we got all these gifts and talents. What are you going to do with them?
Right.
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 What are you going to do
now with them? You guys are both strategic visionaries, willing to kick down the doors to make all of this possible. What does the future hold for you guys? Tell me kind of what, see, both of you guys got giddy grins when I asked that. I love asking a visionary that question watch them take a big old breath and see what it is.
it's been great. That's a hard question. We just left a very dynamic meeting at one of the largest distribution companies here in the entire state of Georgia, and just being able to continue to see the passion catch on and carry a vision. I always say Ibaka 1-2, right? You write a vision down so clearly that whoever reads it can run. Mm-hmm. And we like to run, as this guy likes to run 100 miles, you know? But to really see, and I've been a part of businesses, I've been a part of ministries, to see people, and I mean people, carry this vision out in front of us has been astonishing. And so where this leads, I don't know. We thought it would kind of go slow, and it has kind of really, really went fast and continuing to go fast. And people definitely want to be a part of something much bigger. People want to contribute to humanity, and people want to trust it. And the platform that we have and really delivering those results, it will be exciting to see where we do land up.
Mm. Nick. Yeah.
I could go on a tangent on this one. I am definitely that person that thinks like that. I'll share a real life example. Why is our name on that scoreboard out there, and why we thought that was a great opportunity? And I'll share with you this. The idea that's out on a scoreboard, on a sport field, on a playing field that's out there. One of the visions that we've always had was you could take the lessons that you learn on the playing field and apply them to solve real world problems. And as we think about scoring touchdowns and working out every morning and hitting home runs and shooting, you know, goals, whatever that looks like, how do you go and apply that in a meaningful way for the rest of your life? And it doesn't matter if you're roofing, you're a banker, or wherever you are, you have a purpose and you can fulfill that. And all you got to do is figure out how to leverage what you're getting from that and take your gifts and talents and do it. And so as we think about discipline and leadership and hard work and teamwork and all those things that apply that are related to a scoreboard right out here at Hebron, I think about you're giving a vision to somebody who can take the lessons that they're learning and apply them to real world things that are maybe something that might be outside of their vision and even the folks that are spectating. And so as I think about a real practical and how it applies to why we're here right now, I think that's probably the best answer I can give you without sucking the air out of this room.
Guys, listen, I'm excited just for what the future holds for you guys. It'll be fun to see H2All in our grocery stores and in the convenience stores, and to really be able to connect through that QR code.
That's right.
To recognize the long-term impact and the strategic impact that you guys are having. You guys have said it, like you really have just begun to scratch the surface. That's over right. Over what this can be for an impact globally, and getting people to finally open their eyes to stop walking past the rubble of their lives and actually do something, to actually say, I actually want to be a part of the assistance. I think all the time, you know, God has called us to live big lives. We in kind of an American sentiment, we've misinterpreted to think that big lives must mean big square footage and fancy things.
That's right.
And the big life is when we get to take the blessings that God has given and then in a completely selfless way to be able to say, I'm investing in other things. That people who live with those clenched hands, they can't receive anything. You've got to live with those open hands to say, God has given it, I'm giving it away. That's just the way that it is. That's the big life.
That's right.
And you guys are doing it. And I'm excited to be, we're really excited to be in partnership with you guys.
And yeah, no, you nailed it on the head. I always I use a story. I've been down to the jungles of Bolivia. And we would always take fishing line down and trade, you know, with some the Indians, and we could get, you know, some bow and arrows that came out of the Bolivian jungles and stuff, and they'd use them to shoot fish and shoot monkeys, and I'd always ask, like, how do you shoot the monkey? And so, you know, what they do in the jungles of Bolivia is they take a coconut and they hollow the thing out and they put a Triscuit in there, or what we'd say like a cookie, right? And they go put the cookie in a strategic place where the monkeys are going to come out, and once they got that put up here, well, they go hide over there and they got the bow and arrow ready, and the monkey comes out, and in about the minute Dr. Tilly, he grabs that Triscuit or that biscuit or cookie in there, the Indian comes, starts yelling, and that monkey, man, he grabs onto that Triscuit and he tries to run. Well, he can't get his hand out of the coconut now, so now he's a three-legged monkey, and of course, what do? They shoot him. Moral of the story, if he just let go of the nets.
That's right.
If he just let go of the cookie, he would have lived.
Yeah.
And in so many ways, that was kind of the story of my life, right? And just you grasp on and you read the Gospels and you sit Sunday morning in church in a very nice theater-sized seat. And I got my coffee from the coffee shop and on these IMAX screens. And, man, I'm supposed to go eat about 12:30 here. You know, and then, you know, the flip side is you got places all over the world that believers will sit for 4 hours.
Right. And know walk 10 miles to be there.
Yeah. And you're right. And in so many ways, we clench on, man. And if we would just let go.
And,
man,
and then we wonder why we're missing out on contentment and joy. Yeah. Right. When you live with this with clenched fists.
Yeah.
And it's just remarkable. Right. Just to give that away to the Lord. So, guys, listen, it's going to be exciting to follow our partnership.
Definitely.
And to just see, you know, how this company can do well, but also do good. You know, and it's pretty awesome to be able to see it. So, guys, thanks for coming on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, you guys are a blessing.
One request: can we come back at the end of the school year and report back the impact that Hebron has had?
We would love that.
Okay,
we would love that. Let's plan on it.
We would make that happen. That'd be amazing.
Good stuff. Okay, thanks, guys. We appreciate it. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Joy of Leadership podcast. Living in the center of God's will is a rare blessing in today's day and age. Help us share this vital story of passionate leadership. If you would like to comment on the show, or if you know someone who would be a perfect guest, contact us at thejoyofleadership@gmail.com. If you like the show and don't want to miss a single episode, make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.